Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 12 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. And today I have a special guest. We have John Ohlhauser, who is the coach of the Crandall Boxing University team. And he is also somebody who holds a PhD and is a part-time lecturer. He's also the provost and VP for academic affairs at Crandall University. And he's an amateur boxer himself. So I'm really excited to have him as a guest. I was introduced to him from Sean Finnegan, a guest that we had not too long ago, who's the captain of the team. And so without further ado, everybody, let's talk to John. Hello, John. How's it going? I like the hat.
Hey. I have to wear it.
Yeah, it's you represent.
If I don't wear it, I feel like the air conditioning's on all the time.
Oh, I think that will happen to me soon too. So, don't feel like you're alone.
It's kind of, you get used to it, and then it feels like you're naked without it.
I shaved my head when I was in middle school. And I had got a really bad, pardon?
Did you lose a bet?
No, I just did it for the fun of it. And two bad things happened. One thing was I got like a skin rash, like I did it improperly. And the second thing was everybody thought I was an extremist because I was wearing a lot of military stuff at the same time. So,
yeah.
But thank you so much, John, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to be here tonight.
And I understand you just came from practice. You're working with
you. Just finished. Yeah, we did a 2-hour session. So we're done.
And I think from, because I had Sean on earlier, you guys are doing about 2 sessions a day during the week?
Yeah, that's what it works out to. We do one. I give the boys, it's boys right now. I mean, I do want females to join the team too, but. Yep. They haven't found us yet. Uh-huh. So the guys do one on their own. I give them instructions every day on what they need to do on their own. And then we do the team training at the other end of the day. So, yeah, it works out to about 2 a day. We try to get a rest day in there, too.
Hey, that's the formula, because I wanted to congratulate you on cleaning house in New York. You guys did extremely well.
I just stand at the corner and hold the water. It's the guys who do the work.
True. But it takes two, right? And it's a coach that guides and you know, helps the fighters and reminds them of stuff that they've learned and things that they, you know, have to do in the fight. So, that's really, really amazing. And you represented Canada boxing really well. And I think the main reason that I've wanted you to come on the podcast, besides just talking about your own journey with boxing, is how unique it is that you guys, Crandall University and the Chargers boxing team, are the only collegiate or university boxing team in Canada. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are. There are a couple of other clubs that do boxing for exercise. Mm-hmm. Like Trent has one, and I believe it's Guelph or Windsor, one of those two. They've got a boxer size, but they don't really compete. Well, nobody competes out of that. So yeah, we're the only, and none of those as well have scholarships, and we have those. So we're the only one that really focuses on competitions and offers scholarships.
And I think that's a really amazing opportunity, because you see it a lot in the States with something like wrestling, where, you know, people are able to lend their skills and continue and study and basically continue also their career. And in this case, boxing. Is the state somewhere that has a lot of, do the states have university boxing teams with scholarships?
Yeah, it's interesting. The NCAA actually promoted collegiate boxing until the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And then they had a scandal on not, it was, it didn't have really much to do with the sport. Some people would think that it was because it was a dangerous sport, but no, it had to do with scholarshiping, that there were somehow, I don't know all of the details, but there were scholarships given to, whether they were pro athletes or pro boxers, and it became surprising, right? Boxing, there's no scandals in boxing ever. but so NCAA moved away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the vacuum, the National Collegiate Boxing Association was formed under USA Boxing. So it had nothing to do with NCAA. And so USA Boxing worked with the National Collegiate Boxing Association. And then there's also a, and then of course, they only fight in the ring in boxing, right? No, they fight outside the ring too. And there were a group of disgruntled people in the National Collegiate Boxing Association because some of the rules or some of the restrictions. So there was a breakaway group that formed the USA Boxing Association.
Okay.
And so there's not as many universities associated with the USA Boxing Association, Collegiate Boxing Association. I think there are probably half as many as there is with the National Collegiate Boxing Association. But they also, because of that scandal way back in the 1970s, they still to this day do not offer scholarships in boxing.
Oh.
And so I know nobody listens to this on the south side of the border, do they? But
I think there's a couple people in Mexico.
Oh, well, that's fine. They're great. Yeah. Mexicans are fine.
But yeah.
But just saying the we don't, when we travel and compete in the U.S., we don't make our scholarships an issue. So we don't talk to the other teams and say, oh, well, we have scholarships. No, I tell the guys, if you just talk about financial assistance, just use that. And that's a nice cover word for it. And yeah, so, and I say, why not? I mean, these guys bust their butts, you know, to train. And then they rep Crandall. So why shouldn't they be getting some level of compensation? And well, I'm happy we're able to give the scholarships that we do, because, you know, whenever we travel now to shows, we're going to Alberta in 3 weeks. We were in New York, traveling the Maritimes. I mean, we travel with, you know, the Crandall University name on the shirts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they put in the time. So let's give them the scholarship. And, you know, it was interesting because I've been in the sport for a bit and I saw that, you know, I'm also an academic. I've earned my stripes there. And I knew, I mean, you see hockey, you see football, you see basketball, volleyball, you're wrestling, swimming, you have all these sports at the universities, but boxing isn't. And so I saw an opportunity and, well, it's turning out to be a pretty good idea.
I think it's a very good idea. And on that same lens, there seemed to be, at one point, most armies had boxing teams. But I know with the Canadian Armed Forces, I think they've been kind of backstepping a little bit on that, because I was looking into that a while back, and I was told that there used to be a team, but not anymore. Do you know any insights about? Because I think the Army is somebody, the U.S. Army is somebody that you guys went against, right?
Well, we went against the Army's university.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're all enlisted. They're all, you know, part of the Army, but they're doing a university program as well. Mm-hmm. They do, and I'd love to get involved in this, but they do have, there's Navy has a boxing team. Army has a boxing team. I believe Air Force does in Colorado, and they do get together and compete. I'd love to be able to, join them, but that's kind of a closed network there, unless we could sneak somebody like Sean in, who's a Canadian enlisted person. But
you never know. And Sean's somebody I just had on not too long ago. Really special guy. I see a really bright future with him. I also have had Aubrey McLeod on. We were talking about him. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with Sean? Because he's he represents the sport really well, and a lot of people know about him.
Yeah, he I think he told, I would listen to his story. Yep. He told how he you know came to Crandall and such. Yes. I won't repeat that.
Yeah.
But you know, I also have a team captain. And I've got a description of what a team captain is supposed to be. And you know, Sean fits that description so well that I've asked him the last 2 years to serve as captain of a team.
Okay.
And he is a leader. But he's not the type of leader that forces himself and his ideas on anyone. But you know, if I got something that needs to be done, he's the first guy to put his hand up and says, okay, yep, coach, I'll look after it. We'll get the guys together and we'll get her done. All of my guys that I currently have are good at this, but especially Sean, listening. Like, he hears my voice. You know, I mean, how many other coaches, and I take no credit for how he has developed as a boxer. I mean, I give all the kudos to the guys who have coached him in the past who really helped shape him. And I know Sean has had to have the commitment and the drive, and he's had to put in the time for sure. But so much good things have been done by his former coaches. But even at that, I'm just saying that when he's in a round and I yell out something from the corner for him, I see something that he has an opportunity to take or he needs to correct something, he hears me. And I go, my goodness, he just executed. I just called it out 3 seconds ago and he's already adjusted. And to me, that is a sign of a tremendous athlete who can hear that and just make the adjustments on the fly. So, yeah, that's why he's fun to coach.
I think there's a lot of fighters, even at the top level, that don't even have that skill. And it's really important because you don't see all angles of the fight when you're in it.
Yeah.
But your coach does. And well, they'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll see some adjustments that you should make. You know, maybe you're getting hit by certain things or you should avoid certain things. And it's no surprise as far as the leadership thing, because he's also, from my understanding, he's taken a lot of courses in the military. I'm not saying that that's the full reason that he has that, but he's somebody who has such a broad amount of interests and experiences at such a young age. I mean, I'm 24. I think he's 21.
Yeah.
And like all of that experience that he's gone through, he's a really wonderful guy. And everybody that I talk to about him have nothing but good things to say about him. So it's awesome that you have him as your team captain for the last 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And somebody that, I'm just becoming aware of Adrian Roach. He has a big story about about him in Ecuador. And I just saw recently that you are going to be one of the coaches for Ecuador in one of these events coming up in March.
Yeah, it's the one of the first major international tournaments, you know, since the COVID dust up that is happening in what we'll call the Americas. So it will draw teams from both North, South, and Central America. There's a lot of hunger out there from guys who have just been sitting on the shelf for, you know, the last 2 years with nothing. You know, there have been attempts and there have been things scheduled only for them to sort of dissolve and fade away. So yeah, it's Adrian is on the Bermuda national team and they are entering him. And they asked me, they said, you know, John, you've been working the closest with him for the last, you know, year. And it is interesting because he went home here 2 weeks ago, same week we're in New York, he fought in Bermuda. And all of the folks there were just amazed at his development. And again, I take this much credit for that. And I give this much credit to him for his hard work and his study of the game and his drive and all of that. But, you know, they were very impressed with his development as an athlete. And, you know, lo and behold, they turned around and asked me to be the head coach for the team when it goes to Ecuador. So I'm humbled and honored and looking forward to the trip to Ecuador.
That's an amazing opportunity and an honor. And yes. Did you have a chance at looking at the documentary that he was featured in? He was one of, I think, three?
Yeah, there was a documentary from 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The documentary started following two boxers. You know, the whole idea was, you know, Bermuda hasn't had success in the Olympics since the Montreal Olympics in 76.
Okay.
And so the story was there were these two boxers that really held promise. And when COVID hit and came around, these two guys, they said, look, we're getting older. We can't wait for COVID to settle down. We just missed an Olympics. So we're going to, you know, strike out and go pro. And so they thought, well, who do we have left coming up through the system? And there was this young guy, Adrian. And so he's sort of now been given the mantle from his country to say, Adrian, we want to invest in you and we believe you have promise. And we're hoping that and the 2024 Olympics, you'll bring hardware home for Bermuda. So I get just a tiny little bit of contribution into that journey for him. And they're actually they're going to re-release, or I shouldn't say re-release, they're doing a whole new documentary and they just filmed part of it on a trailer that they released here on New Year's Day for him in his now continued journey to 2024.
Wow. That's amazing that there's that story and that he's kind of, you know, carrying the torch for his country and, you know, and hope. And it's really cool that you're also going to be a part of that as far as, you know, with the coaching side and then also, you know, helping the national team.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, I'm just a little boxing coach in New Brunswick. And to just be given the opportunity, I'm thrilled and honored. And you know, we're going to Ecuador. And I told Bermuda, I said, our goal is to come back as winners. So that's what we're going down to do.
And what was it like, kind of your first experience meeting him? Like, did he move all the way from Ecuador to Canada for study and for boxing?
No, he's from Bermuda.
Bermuda.
So the first time I met him and his parents was actually in 2020 in the springtime on a Zoom call. And his parents really believe in him as an athlete, but they also want him to get an education.
Uh-huh.
And so we were introduced by Zoom. I told them the story and they said, together as a family, we're going to do this. So the first semester he was at Crandall,
mm-hmm,
was the fall of 2020, and everything was online. So we had him online from Bermuda, and he worked at a restaurant as well. So there was one class or one course that I taught and he was in it, and he would always be in the back storage room of the restaurant in class. I could see dishes and food supplies around him. But and then he came in January of 21, at the same time, we also had recruited a young boxer from Cyprus. And the two of them, we put up, at the time you could do this. I don't think you could do it today, but at the time we could actually put them in a cottage. We put them just off Shediac in a cottage together, and they did their isolation for 2 weeks. And then they came out, and that's when I first met him for the very first time and shook his hand.
That must have been a surreal moment because you get to meet somebody, you know, online or whatnot, and then have that moment where you get to actually meet in person and then finally, you know, get onto the objective as far as the boxing and in-person training. Yeah. That's, again, as I've been saying, like, this is awesome that you have such wonderful, interesting people part of your team.
Well, yeah, and Matt, it's I'm on the, you know, I'm in the front seat of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I work with these guys every day. And they're their character as a team is unbelievable, tight. And now I have, I mean, one of the things we get to do as a university is we get to represent Canada at the World University Boxing Championships this coming fall. It's in Russia, so we'll be traveling there. But in order to represent us well as a nation, I've recruited across the weight classes. So I don't have a whole bunch of guys, you know, sort of grouped into one weight. They're spread all over. So they have no problem knowing that when we go to a show, we've got a guy at, you know, 57, we've got a guy at 69, we got a guy at 75, we got a guy, and they're tight and they cheer for each other and they are, I mean, they motivate and push each other. It's just, you know, everybody talks about boxing being the loneliest sport. You probably heard that.
Of course.
And you know, and there's a lot of truth to that because you got to put in your time. You got to do your road work. You got to, you know, you, but our experience here is this thing isn't lonely. These guys are, there's something about working together on a biology course. And then you go off to history. And so you're working at your academics together, but then you're training together. And it's not a lonely place. These guys are their biggest fans of each other, and they encourage each other. They hold each other accountable. It's, yeah, you're in the ring by yourself, but this is a team. There's no doubt about it.
My favorite thing has been like Sean Hill or a couple of the team members. They'll like put on their story at like 6 a.m. They'll like see somebody at the gym and they're like, hey, and they're, you know, they kind of have that, like you said, accountability and teamwork and encouraging each other. So I think what you touched on is really, really interesting because there's actually like an Instagram, it's called The Loneliest Sport, and it tries to show the, you know, the individual aspect about boxing, but certainly there's all these different factors that motivate us. And a lot of times, you know, people, and it can be the biggest motivators, especially, you know, kind words to one another, encouraging each other, teaching stuff that, you know, maybe they don't know. Because I'm sure, you know, everybody that's a part of your team is from different walks of life and, you know, have strengths, have weaknesses, and together as, you know, as a team, they can work on all that.
Absolutely.
And now I want to move the conversation more towards you in the sense of where did your journey into boxing begin? Because I know you were saying that you are an academic. So you have a place at Crandall University?
Yes, I do. Yeah. My title at Crandall, I've been here since 2016, the start of that year. I'm the provost and the vice president for academic affairs. So I'm more of an administrator, although I do teach as well in the area of communication and not-for-profit management. So I do that as well. Growing up, I chuckle on this. I don't think there's a link, but I suppose if I had our psychologists sit down with me, they'd probably say, no, there is a link to this. I was a hockey player growing up.
Okay.
But I was a goaltender. So two things about goaltenders. They're weird. Okay. So the first thing, they're the weirdest people on the whole team. And number two is they often don't get to be involved in scraps. So they're often an instigator. But, you know, if they instigate something, it's usually the defensemen that take over, you know, and they say, you're not going to, you know, touch our goaltender. And so you get there and say, well, okay, I started the fight, but I'm not finishing it. So I don't know. I don't know if there was something latent in me as a goaltender from I played all the way up to university hockey in the U.S. But then, you know, middle age, I've got kids, one daughter who's 15, and she says to me, Dad, I really am interested in the RCMP as a career. And I said, okay, fantastic. Let's go and talk to the recruiter and let's see what you should do as a 15-year-old, what courses you should take, what the other things you should do. And so they gave her a whole bunch of things, but on the list was, you know, you should enroll in a combat sport. Okay, Dad, I've done karate. I don't want to do karate anymore. I'd like to do boxing, but I'm a 15-year-old girl and I'm nervous to go to a gym. I don't know how I'll be, would you go with me? And so I was 45 at the time. And I said, well, I'm kind of interested in it, but I'm not going to go and sit in the parking lot and wait for your session to be done. I'll at least go in and see what kind of exercise this is like. All the while sort of having in the back of my mind from long ago, when I was maybe 20, thinking, oh, it would be love to compete in a combat sport like boxing. But after months, I was in good shape. I was keeping up with all the 20-year-olds. And I thought, okay, if I'm keeping up, I can put in the rounds. I can run like these guys. I said to my coach, does anybody my age of 45 ever compete? And they said, well, there's not a lot, but we can put you on that track. So I'm going to take out COVID. So in the last 8 years, then I've had 23 fights.
Oh, wow. And
the first 18 of those 23 were done in Alberta. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is it Alberta? I mean, we're seeing it now with all of these trucker protests or whatever.
Yeah.
Alberta's Alberta. So they actually put me in the ring with 20-year-olds.
Wow.
Like, you're not supposed to, Boxing Canada, the Masters rules, you're supposed to only fight guys over 40 and within 10 years of your age.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if I impressed them or if they were crazy or what. I remember going to the very first show, and I pulled up. I'd never done this, and my coach was caught in a snowstorm, so he wasn't there, and it was weigh-ins. And so I said, well, I'm the last guy in the room. I better go check in. And so I walked up to the person at the desk, and she said, oh, coaches are over there. I said, well, I'm not a coach. I'm actually in the show. And she just about fell off her chair, and she said, okay. And I didn't win that one. I lost the split decision, but I just loved it. And I remember, Matt, every morning, it doesn't happen anymore. Although, I'll tell you, I was supposed to fight in New York on our trip here, but my opponent came in overweight, so they wouldn't let us go. But back in, when I'm in the 47, 46, every day I would wake up and the first thing I would look at was my cell phone to see if there was a text from my coach saying that he had matched me for a fight.
Wow.
Every day. He was just saying, okay, maybe, oh, no, nothing today. Okay, I'll keep waiting. It just gets in your blood and it's weird, but that was, where I was at.
That's actually very, that's very good of you to, try and support your daughter. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a 15-year-old girl wanting to walk into a boxing gym
for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we certainly have been getting from I've had Sierra Escuzade, and I've had Stacia, the natural Suttles on, and I've had a few females on the show already. And I've always asked them the question about what is it like being a female in a predominantly male dominated sport. And I can't imagine what it's like to be a female going into a gym. Maybe it's getting a little bit better, but I can tell you one thing is that it's probably a lot better when you get somebody like your dad, somebody that you know that's behind you, that's supporting you. So that's awesome that you were willing and open-minded enough to go in there with her, because I'm sure you both benefited from going there, right? This is something that's a big part of your life.
Yeah, she did one competition. And she's happy she did it, but then that was it.
Okay.
And I mean, that's what happens with a lot of people. They'll set a goal. I want to try this. But then when they're done, they're saying, I'm glad I did, but that's all I need. For me, I'm still looking. I just turned 56 last week. So.
Oh, Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
And the follow-up question is, did she end up joining the RCMP?
No, she didn't.
Okay.
She had an eye issue that required her surgery in order for her to qualify for it. And the eye surgeon, because it was she's technically legally blind, although she's, she still drives and things, but the surgery is not guaranteed. And it also is not guaranteed, if it did work, for actually to stay for more than 3 or 4 years. So she's decided, no, she's going to work in a different line of work, and decided, no use keeping, down that path when it didn't look like it was going to materialize.
Well, I give her kudos for having a vision at 15. And unfortunately, I also am like legally blind without glasses. So I can totally understand, like, I can drive. I box without my glasses on. I don't know how. I tell people all the time, I'm like, good thing I don't have to like read fine print or anything while I'm punching somebody, right? But yeah, like the RCMP, I don't 100% know. I mean, maybe there are reasons, but they're very strict. They're more strict than the Army.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. So, and it used to be they had like height requirements and this or that. Like they had their own vision about what it's like to be law enforcement in Canada.
Yes.
I thought it was just like he rode horses or something, but no, they no.
Well, she also found, she did a number of ride-alongs, and she also, that helped. I think that didn't help because she saw how much paperwork there was to do. That, it didn't matter. Any incident, you had reams and reams and reams of reports to file. And she said, do I really want to do that for the rest of my life? I don't know.
And all the disorderly conduct you had to deal with, and you have to write it down. Like, he said this, and you're like, I don't even want to think about what he said. And now I have to, make photocopies for the whole entire, RCMP headquarters. So that's awesome. So you've competed quite a bit, and you also, I didn't know that. So you were gonna compete also, which is, hey, you're not just the general that's going into war from behind. You're going there to front. You're also gonna, lead the team as far as competing yourself, which is really awesome.
Well, I every time I do it, Matt, I do it with mixed feelings.
Okay.
Because I want to be in there. Every time I see my guys fight and I see the pictures after, I'd say, I wish I was me. I want to be in there. But at the same time, I have to remember now that I've been given the responsibility of coach. Mm-hmm. And I did it in New York because I was confident in the guys I was taking, and I had arranged so that that I would fight, but there would be a number of fights that would happen after, until my first opportunity to coach, because I've done it before where I've been on a show with one of my fighters that I'm coaching, and I don't think I was there 100% for them as a coach, because I was thinking about my own game. I was thinking, okay, he's fighting before me. Okay, I can get in there, I can watch him, but I'm also thinking about preparing for my own time in the ring. And so I want to do it. Like, I'll go to the Brampton Cup because I know that they push us masters off to the end. So all my coaching is done by then. But I really have to be careful that I don't commit to a fight where it takes away from what I have to offer my guys as a coach. So it rips me because I want to be in there too, but I say, but I got to be their coach. I got to be there for them 100%.
This, what you're describing really reminds me of something that my coach Bridget, which she said hi, by the way, Bridget Stevens at Tribal, something that she said, because she's also a fighter turned coach, and she had to kind of transition, not to her own desire at the time. She had a, I believe it was a jaw injury, and it was very hard for her. It's a little, in some ways it's a little bit different than what you're saying, but then in other ways it's similar. She had a hard time seeing her fighters fight because she wanted to be the person that was there herself and competing still and going about her goals. And then now, I think she's reached a point now where she's able to be content with the fact that her fighters are the ones that are getting the attention. And more so than that, she's finding it a lot, and maybe you agree with this, it's a lot harder when it's your fighter that's in the ring, as far as, you know, your nerves and everything like that, than maybe even if you were fighting. Do you have that kind of sense yourself, or is it still more nerve-wracking fighting yourself?
Yeah, I think I still have the higher sense of adrenaline, and I'll say, yeah, it's nervousness. It's funny though, Matt, I don't know, and Bridget might say the same thing. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Any fight, I've got butterflies until the first step inside the ring, the first step through the ropes. It's like it just sheds right there. It's just gone. It doesn't follow me into the ring. As soon as I'm standing in there, I'm like, where did the nerves go? This is going to be fun. I'm going to win this. So, I mean, it's really weird. It's just, you step through and it's like this thing just sheds off you and it stays on the apron on the outside.
I have not had the experience to fight yet, but I've had the experience of actually being a pro corner man at the, it was one of the Ryan Rizicki cards in Cape Breton, the Valentine's Day Massacre. I believe it was in 2019, it was just before the pandemic. So is that 2019 or 2020?
Yeah, it would have been 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
February 2019. Mm-hmm. And I remember it wasn't obviously me fighting, but I tried to, you know, comfort my fighter and everything like that. And I helped them, whatever, prepare. I was walking into the ring. I fell and I actually cut my finger. And then in between, like, I wore these new Timberland boots. I thought I looked so cool. I never wore like Timberland or like construction boots ever in my life. So I learned right then and there, you got to have like comfortable clothes when you're actually cornering. And the fight only went two rounds. We were against a debut fighter, Josh Prince. And basically when I was giving him water, there was blood all over the water bottle. He's like, what happened? And I was like, oh, it's actually me. I fell, like the blood's all over your water bottle. He won, right? He actually didn't get any blood on. The biggest loss of blood was me. But I do remember when I stepped in there on that show, because it was a pro card, and maybe the AMs have it this way too. The lights, when they hit you, it's like there's a heat and a weight. Yep. And the crowd, like everybody was there from Cape Breton waiting for Rizicki. And when my fighter had knocked down his opponent, the noise and how it pierces you. So I'm glad that you're able to put that away once you get through the ropes, because I was just thinking to myself, if I was ever in that situation, man, there's nothing like it. It's like a supernatural event happening.
Oh, I mean, the rush is tremendous, but and I don't know why it happens. There's just, I step through the ropes and there's just the sense of, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. Yeah. What's the big deal? Let's just go to work.
And that's awesome too, when you were describing like your eagerness, because I think there are a lot of people, especially now with there being a lot of cancellations and hopefully none in the future, but there had been in the past. Knock on wood. My desk is made out of wood.
Mine's arborite. It doesn't count.
Okay. But yeah, like I think a lot of people can relate to that eagerness, as far as they want them wanting to start their career or continue their career. they have ambitions for the Olympics, maybe, or some form of competition, maybe to become a pro someday. And when I had Sierra on actually yesterday, she was talking about the fact that three of the nationals, for her, I don't know if it's all nationals or if it was just for her particular age group, have been canceled. So she has not able to been make the national team the last 3 years. I think the only hope that she said she had was something around youth under 18 for some type of other tournament. But yeah, it's been a lot of red lights for a lot of people. And I guess one thing I want to ask you is, because I'm sure you've had a lot of fighters that have come to you about this. Is there, when you're getting a lot of red lights, is there any mental things or ways of about still looking towards the positive side or continuing with your boxing?
I mean, I think that's, you know, we talked about boxing being the loneliest sport. You know, mm-hmm. that's where it becomes the most difficult. You know, you've got to say, and that's where I really see the real boxer from the person who thinks they're wanting to be a boxer. Because a real boxer will say, yeah, my day will come. I've got to keep at this. I've got to keep sharp. I have to take my opportunities. I'm looking around, sparring different people. You know, to me, that's where I, as a coach, see, you know, that person over there, even though, you know, we're shut down and we're in isolation, man, they're still, you know, on the road. They're still running. They're still doing their pull-ups on that monkey bar in the school ground because there's no other place to go. And they don't have a scheduled opponent. They don't have a scheduled fight now, but they're still there putting in their time as though they're fighting this weekend.
And Sean, when I was talking to him, and you know this more than me, he took up cross country, eh? I don't know if it was the chicken or the egg, but he started doing cross country and he did place really well in some races.
When he started with Crandall, we had another boxer here from Mexico.
Okay.
And Marvick was he had the most interesting gait as a runner, but he could run like the wind. And so Sean started, and then we'd have them go out and, you know, do sprints with each other. And they push each other. Okay. They're competitors. And so Marvick really got Sean kind of introduced to this running thing. And then Marvick was on the cross country team, and Sean got involved with it, but then COVID happens and Marvick went home to Mexico and didn't come back. But Sean said, hey, I'm going to stick with this. And well, my goodness, he sure helped our team this year win a maritime championship. So he's a Superman.
Yeah. And have you seen, just as a coach, because I was talking to him, and you tend to see like endurance play a huge factor in the pros more than the amateurs. I mean, certainly like you can, speed tends to be a big factor when the amateurs with only the three rounds, but have you seen a difference in his athletic ability because of doing this extra curricular in running? Has he been able to endure more or?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to embarrass him, and he'll laugh at this, and he'll one of the first training sessions I took him through when he first, you know, was coming to Crandall, it was still nice weather. So we were working outside. And I remember it was, I don't know, 2/3 of the way through the session. And I said, why is Sean over in the bushes? He was over there throwing up.
Oh no.
And I said, oh, okay, I'm good. I'm not being too soft on him. We're making him work. But you know what? I've never got him close to that since. And so I think that's, you know, all of his output. And I think he looked at that and he said, no, that isn't where I want to be. I do, that's one thing. I think it's a little bit different than, a lot of community clubs are organized to offer a boxing experience and skill. But again, you're on any particular evening, you're running, you know, all the way from age 7 to, you know, 40 or whatever it is, and you've got different levels of skills, different interests, and then people are buying memberships and they're coming in for their 1 hour session and then their 2 hour session, and you don't have time to work a lot on the conditioning side of things. And then you tell those who are competitive, yeah, you got to do your conditioning stuff, but you got to do it on your own. But I build that right in here to our program. And so, you know, when I drove Sean to end up throwing up in the bushes, I know he said, that's not where I want to be with John. And so, you know, he just picked it up, and, you know, I haven't gotten him anywhere close to, at least he doesn't tell me anywhere close to throwing up again.
Sean, just so you know, just so you're not embarrassed, we actually are going to put a plaque at that bush, and that bush is going to have a name, and every student or everybody in the local area that walks by there, this is where the great Sean Finnegan, you know, tested his limits, and yeah. Never shall he again have any of his vomit on the bush. Yeah. That's an awesome story. Cause, I've obviously talked to him a lot. Cause I thought I was going to join the army for a while at Ormukto, and I was following him and Ormukto and New Brunswick in general too, has a huge history of boxing.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that, you know, Crandall is also able to be a part of that chapter, because I don't know if you know Yvonne Durrell, the fighting fisherman. Yes. You know, he's somebody that my grandfather used to talk about all the time. And I didn't know too much, obviously, about him. And then I find out he has this crazy war with Archie Moore, and that he had the same trainer, Goldman, as Rocky Marciano. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, wow. You know, we have a very rich history, you know, Atlantic Canada, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, however you want to look at it. And it's really awesome that the next generation, whether they're from here or they're just coming here for study and being a part of the team, it's awesome that the next generation has this opportunity to also learn and work on their academic skills, so that they not only have the boxing skills that they want to develop, but they also have, you know, the life skills.
Yeah, and
career skills.
I don't have any doubt, Matt, that some of these guys are really going to do something with the sport. But I tell them, you know, when we're doing the recruitment pitch and I'm explaining to them, I said, you know, success in the ring for us and for me is important. I mean, we want to win, and we're not just going in there for an experiment and for a, you know, walk around the, you know, squared circle. We're going in to win. We're going in to fight hard. But I said, success in the ring is important, but success in life is more important. I said, you know, I want you to have success in your academics. I want you to have success in your relationships. I want you to have success, you know, emotionally, you know, and success in all of these aspects, not just physically in your ability as a boxer. And, you know, And we also add unapologetically, we say we want you to be successful spiritually too. You know, we want you to where however that is. And so we give that holistic approach. I like to say, guys, how are your relationships going, either with your roommate or your significant other, or, you know, whatever it is, your parents, you know, those are important for you, you know. You know, how about mentally? How are your classes going? You know, you're getting by. We've got helps around here. Let's be sure we'd be successful there as well. And you know, if it's, you know, important for you, then spiritually as well. So we've got helps and opportunities to grow there too.
And that's beyond just boxing.
Yep.
I think that is the right way to go about it, because now they're able to focus on the boxing because they have all these other things already looked after, right? If you have, you know, a bad relationship, you know, how often do those things impact, you know, your day-to-day things? They can, right? So that's awesome that that's kind of at least understood that these things are important and should be, you know, dealt with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we are getting close to time, and I really appreciated you coming on to the show. Certainly had a lot to talk about. Kind of in closing, what's the most upcoming thing that you're working towards, or that people that are listening can help support? Is there ways that can help support the team at Crandall University and everything you guys are doing? Because I'm sure there's people that are listening, and maybe they have some kids that they want to get into boxing. They're like, oh, this is an awesome avenue in the future. How can they support you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's at what level of support? I mean, we've got some great shows coming up to cheer on, but you know, if there's a kid there who happens to tune in and who's 15 or 16 years old, I didn't do that. I mean, when you're the only game in town, Matt, you end up getting, I mean, how many guys out of 11 that I have on my team now are on their national teams? I mean, I think it's 5 or 6. It's the team, until there are other university teams in the area or in Canada, you know, I'm going to have some fairly deep talent on this team. But so a kid who says, hey, I want to do that. You know, I'm 15. I've got 2 or 3 years of high school left. I want to be on that university team. I want to have those experiences. I want to get that scholarship. You know, it's not impossible, but you got to bust your butt. I mean, you got to put in you got to shoot. You got to be at least shoot for a provincial championship. And you got to get your fight counts up. I said, you know, somebody who comes to me and says, well, you know, John, I've got 3 fights on my record. You know, is it good enough to join the team? And I'd go, if I had a junior varsity team, sure, but I don't. I only have the varsity team. And unless you're an open fighter, it'll be really tough to, and I hope everybody knows what that is, open fighter, you got 10 or more fights. I think it'll be tough to break in and make it on the team, but it's possible. It's still, I mean, I'm still in conversation with 2 guys from the Maritimes yet for this coming fall, who have the record and the skill and the ability. And I hope that I see them wearing a Crandall jersey come September. But so there's that, yeah.
I was going to say, maybe for your, I might have a solution for your problems with other universities not competing. Maybe you just got to stir the pot a little bit, you know, go to some of the universities and start, you know, doing some friendly wagers or whatnot. You get some other academics who want to maybe who have a boxing background that want to feed into, you know, a cross Canada boxing.
Well, I know we're almost out of time, but I'll say 2 things. First of all, both UNB and Acadia showed an initial about 2 years ago. Oh, we should do that. And I'm saying, yeah, I'll help you.
Wow. Well,
that was the end of this. That was about it. That's about as far as it got.
If somebody's listening and they're in university, yeah, maybe write a letter yeah, and try to get your university. Yeah.
And you can have their, you know, UNB, you know, whoever can reach out to us and say, how did you do it? Help us get going. Yeah. Love to help you get going. But the other thing is we go to the University World Championships. Mm-hmm. I told you it's only going to be in Russia.
Yes.
That organization, which is the Federation of University Sports, is the host of that. They're actually working with and they just announced it 3 weeks ago. They're working with the International Boxing Association to enhance and develop a more robust university boxing program worldwide.
Okay.
And so I told U Sport, I told Boxing Canada, I said, yeah, we're ready as Crandall University, we're ready to do the heavy lifting to make that happen in Canada. We'd love to see a Western division, a Central division, and an Eastern division. And, you know, if there's three or four universities in each one of those, you have your own divisional tournaments. And then the winners of that come together to a national tournament. And then the winners of that national tournament are the ones that get to go to this World University Championship. Because right now, it's just us. So anybody I recruit, and that's why I'm very picky on this talent, because this is an IABA tournament. I mean, this is high end. So I'm not going to take a guy there with three fights. I mean, he'll die.
I'm thinking too, I'm really interested to see the Russian competition, because you know, it'd be, I was talking with Sean just as a closing, like, and I've talked with every also Sierra, and I've talked with I don't think I've talked about Stacia with this yet, but you know, who's been the toughest competition that you face? And they both actually, it was Sierra that said in Hawaii, but Sean said in Ireland, because in Ireland they tend to choose more lanky fighters for the weight division and know how to use their reach and whatnot. But I'm interested, once a fighter has experience with all the different countries, because a lot of countries have different coaching styles and different fighting styles. Of course, the Cubans and Russians, etc. I'd be really interested after that event, you know, going against all these different countries, what your feel is for all of them.
Well, we will have fun, and our goal is to come home with some hardware.
And when you said hardware, I was thinking like, oh, like some appliances, you know, like, oh, I'll take this fridge home with me. Yeah, sure. No, some metals, of course.
Yes.
That's, well, you've certainly proven it just recently that you can bring some hardware. So I'm hoping on the world stage that this also happens.
Well, we'll want to represent Canada well, and Crandall, and New Brunswick.
Hey, I really appreciate your time coming on here, chatting, you know, sharing your story, sharing, you know, what you're working on, what your fighters are working on. I think it's awesome what you guys are doing. That's why I wanted to have you on. You know, I think you're making history. So please keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, maybe we'll have you on in the future once there's some more updates, some more fights. Yeah.
Very good. I would look forward to the invitation, Matt. Thank you for the invitation for tonight.
All right. And as always, stay safe and take care.
And you as well. Thanks.
Take care. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of the podcast. I really had a good time talking with John. I think there was a lot of interesting things that we talked about. The main thing, though, is I think it was a really cool insight about the kind of team aspect and how the team members of Crandall University Boxing Club motivate each other. Because as we've already known, boxing is known as one of the most loneliest sports because of the individual aspects, mentally, physically, that have to go in to the sport. And to hear that refreshing take about how people can help and motivate each other was really refreshing. So I hope everybody has taken some important lessons from our conversation today. And I also wanted to remind anybody that hasn't already, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel or on your preferred podcast platform. So that way, when a new episode comes out, you're the first person to listen. And as always, guys, stay safe. Have a good rest of your day, whatever time you're listening to it. And we'll catch you on the flip side. Take care.